This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for Friday the 4th of April 2014. Hello and a very warm welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper. We're very pleased to bring you extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 4th of April 2014, which this week have been edited by Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. And your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Graham Cranmer.
Hello.
And Albie Minns.
Hello.
And I am your presenter, Roy Faithful. Well, we've got three front page headline stories this week, and they are £120 million to build new hospital, cautious seal of approval for the Silver Hill regeneration, and Roman wall reduced to rubble. So may we now have the story behind the first headline, please, Nikki.
Which was the £120 million to build new hospital. Fears over future of RHCH. Health Chief's plans to shake up hospital care in Winchester will cost £120 million, a meeting heard. A crowded public meeting was told the new hospital, earmarked for a site between Winchester and Basingstoke, would cater for 15% of patients, with the other 85% treated at either North Hampshire or Royal Hampshire County hospitals. The meeting was chaired by local MP Steve Brine, with the public quizzing health managers about the controversial changes amid fears it is the first step to the RHCH becoming a cottage hospital. The new critical treatment centre would cost £120 million, take 2.5 years to build and cost £7 million a year to run. It won't create jobs and will actually mean fewer beds across the area, down from 900. Mary Edwards, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospitals Foundation Trust, said it would be more efficient with specialist centres on one site instead of two and easier access for ambulances. This is about delivering and improving services in general hospitals. The 15% sickest patients will be taken to the right site and be seen more quickly with the correct treatment and specialist care. However, a question from Mr. Hugh in the audience prompted applause. Land at Winchester Hospital has been sold off for non-medical purposes. I see student flats there. Why is it that you are saying there is not enough space to build on our existing facilities? Ms. Edwards said, centralisation in Winchester is not the right answer. The physical location is not ideal and is too close to Southampton General. The two sites optioned for consultation are the NHH in Basingstoke or the Green Triangle between the M3, A303 and A34. Mr. Brine said, Basingstoke is not an option for me because it's too far away and will compromise services and patient care for the people in my constituency. By building at either Winchester or Basingstoke, the centre of gravity is too far at either end. Concerns were also raised about access for families or the sick. But Chief Medical Officer Dr. Andrew Bishop said consideration was being given to the location. We want to minimise the time people spend in hospital and therefore there will not be as great a need for visitors as we used to see in the old days. The panel also included HHFT Associate Director of Midwifery, Caroline Brunt, and local GP Dr. Nigel Sylvester from the West Hampshire Clinical Commissioning Group, which has an annual budget of some £560 million. Dr. Sylvester said, centralisation is a scary word because it feels like something has been taken away and put somewhere else, but that is not the case. It will be a great benefit to the population, and it is the 15% sickest we are talking about. Ms. Brunt said maternity services would not be compromised. Quotes, Floral Portal House in many ways will continue to provide the services it does today for women who have had uncomplicated first birth and are expecting their second, can choose to have a natural birth at home or in hospital and are unlikely to have complications.
And let's have the story behind the second headline, please. Graham.
A cautious seal of approval for the Silver Hill regeneration. Revised plans for Winchester's £130 million Silver Hill scheme have come under scrutiny at a public exhibition. The development was on show, with new architects' drawings depicting amended plans for small squares, pedestrianised walkways and designs for the buses. The number of homes has been cut from 307 to 180, allowing the scheme to be less high, although still taller than the top of the bell tower on the nearby Brooks Centre. There may also be no social housing. The Chronicle understands that negotiations are ongoing for developer Henderson Global Investors to pay a sum to allow it not to build the 35% social housing as approved in 2009. Such housing would need lifts, which make the development much more expensive. Henderson wants to up the number of owner-occupiers in more 2- and 3-bedroom flats and have a parking space per household instead of 1 per 3. It proposes 75 3-bedroom flats, 44 2-bed, 55 1-bed and 6 studios. It also wants to, quote, attract a greater number of owner-occupiers and longer-term residents, reflecting local demand in Winchester, unquote. There will still be 280 public spaces. Designs were displayed to some 600 people, giving them the chance to talk to developers at the Guildhall. A fresh planning application is expected soon. Planners have come under fire recently as the designs do not include a traditional bus station. Martin Perry, Director of Retail Property Development at Henderson, said while there will be no station as such, buses will still be available, and argued they will be an improvement on what is there at the moment. Mr. Perry said the design was more, quotes, linear, unquote, to create a, quote, landscaped boulevard, unquote, along Friars Gate. From a resident's point of view, he said you'll still be getting the same bus. The number 22 will still leave from its own stop. Now it just means that when you wait for a bus, you have proper seats at the stop and you will still be able to buy your ticket from a person at a ticket office. Space originally earmarked for the bus station will go for extra retail space, including a 2-storey department store. At the exhibition, one resident was overheard saying people would be let down by the development, arguing it would not cater for disabled people. Another resident said he was concerned about units blocking the views throughout the city. I'm a bit worried about the height. If you look down Middle Brook Street, you'd be able to see the cathedral. It would be messed up by all of this. We will now review all comments provided in detail as we refine the alterations for submission to the City Council. Work could start later this year, with completion due in early 2018.
And a third story, please, Albie.
Which is Roman wall reduced to rubble. A 2,000-year-old Roman wall in Winchester has been destroyed to make way for new homes. Local historians were outraged that Bargate Homes, building 14 new homes at the site of the former Peugeot dealer in Southgate Street, was considering breaking the wall down. Last week, that became a reality. Colin Cook of the Winchester Area Tourist Guides Association witnessed the destruction. It's desperately sad. I have got sympathy with Bargate Homes, but the planners do need to be a lot more aware of the sensitivities of these sites. A City Council spokesman said that a medieval ditch found at the site would be preserved. Professor Martin Biddle, a world-renowned archaeologist who had led major excavations in the city, told the Chronicle that so long as the site was fully excavated and recorded, he did not feel that the wall was necessarily worth preserving. Cities are living things, he said. And there's a photograph. Well, in fact, there's two photographs. One of the wall and one without the wall. And in the place of the wall, there's a bulldozer.
And that concludes the front page headline stories. And now we continue with death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, your say, historical items, first person, and chronicle comment. I'll start with the death notices. Edmund, William Bill Edmund, peacefully at Royal Hampshire County Hospital, aged 80. Formand, Reverend Joseph Joe Foreman of Hyde, at home, aged 87. Gilmore, Lawrence William Gilmore, peacefully aged 84. Michener, David Michener, peacefully aged 89. Mulholland, Ian Mulholland, unexpectedly aged 52. And finally, Tyrrell, Ronald William George Tyrrell, peacefully at Old Alsford Cottage, aged 87. Now we continue with Christian comment, read by Nikki.
Headed, Love's Labour is Never Lost. The search for the missing Malaysian flight MH370 in the southern Indian Ocean has been a labour of love. The understandable grief and anger of relatives shouldn't cloud the remarkable efforts of many countries working together to find some clue as to what went wrong. They may never succeed, but at least they have tried to serve those in need. In the voluntary sector in which I work, many people donate their time and service. The cathedral has over 650 volunteers, without whom it simply could not function. They do what they do out of love for all that that building represents. They certainly expect some reward for their labours. For example, they are keen to know what is going on, to have their comments noted and their presence appreciated. Nonetheless, they are a highly motivated group who routinely do much more than could be reasonably expected. One consequence of working for love rather than money is that people are very invested in what they achieve. There is no harm in people taking pride in their work. One even has a sense of God's pride in creation when at the end of the sixth day, having created man and woman, he steps back to see that everything was very good. This investment, however, can sometimes result in possessiveness, which makes change difficult. We are just about to rip out the entire 1970s refurbishment of one arm of the cathedral to make way for new exhibitions and facilities. After 40 years, there are few left to object, but other projects in hand present more of a challenge. A friend who lived to be 98 saw, by the end of her long life, every single piece of her life's work destroyed. The department she led, the work among the poor that she instigated. Yet she managed to remain detached, trusting that what she had done was the best offering she could have made in the circumstances. Jesus did the same. He had quite a project going, healing and teaching. He built a sizable following. But when it came to the crunch, he neither protected himself nor let his disciples protect him. As he approached death, he was able to pray, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." He trusted that, however things seemed to have turned out, his labour of love would never be lost. Canon Rowley Ream.
We'll continue with letters to the editor. If you wish to contact the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by telephoning 01962 860 836 or emailing news@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or one can write to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL. And we have 9 letters to the editor this week, starting with one read by Graham.
And it's headed Prosperity Linked to EU Membership, and it's from Richard Grant of Biston Close Burley. Sir, another significant local employer has called on Britain to remain in the European Union. The industrial giant General Electric, which employs over 18,000 people in the UK, said that leaving the EU would be bad for Britain and bad for Europe. Meanwhile, the CEO of Thomas Cook has stressed that being part of the EU has made travelling both cheaper and easier. Leaving would lead to more hassle and could see the cost of holidays soar for British consumers. This is another reminder of the extent to which prosperity and jobs are linked to EU membership. But, sadly, it seems UKIP and Eurosceptic Tories will continue to put their ideological hatred ahead of Britain's interests. There is nothing patriotic about undermining Britain's influence, putting jobs at risk, and wrecking the economic recovery. These are issues that should be on all of our minds as we cast our vote in May's European elections. Richard Grant, Biston Close, Burley.
Privatisation of cancer services. Sir, we are very fortunate in Hampshire to have excellent cancer services, and like many readers, I know several people who have benefited from them. So it was with alarm that I read of a scheme to hand over cancer care in the NHS to private providers, starting with a pilot scheme in the Midlands, which will affect over 1 million people. A massive contract for cancer care, worth over £700 million, has been announced for the Staffordshire area, with a further £500 million for end-of-life care. We were promised there would be no privatisation in the NHS, but hospital-based frontline cancer services, including surgery, chemotherapy and radiotherapy, are being opened for tender by the private sector. This process is being driven by a shadowy organisation called the Strategic Project Team and is run by management consultants, not permanent NHS employees. There is no clarity as to whom they are accountable. Your life in their hands has taken on a sinister new meaning. We should be alarmed. Christopher Pankhurst, Greenhill Road, Fulford, Winchester.
Reassurances on new textile banks. Sir, may I respond to recent article concerning the recently introduced textile banks? These have been introduced on council-owned car parks as a joint initiative with our partners, East Hampshire District Council, aimed at improving the way textiles are collected and income distributed. Our procurement process has resulted in an excellent rate of income, and we will ensure charities with banks on our sites will not suffer financially. We have been careful to protect the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Air Ambulance, and we intend to pay them an increased income for the next 3 years. A key improvement will be the acceptance of not only old clothes and shoes, but clean, worn and torn items such as old linens, odd socks and underwear. We reuse items that would have been wasted. I would urge everyone to begin an early spring clean and bag up items to fill our banks. You will be contributing to local causes and charities. Details will appear on our website shortly. We recognise that people like to choose which charities to support, so alternative recycling locations are also listed. I hope this reassures anyone concerned that the City Council is acting in the best interests of charities and good causes. And there's a photograph of these large blue recycling bins in Hairstock, very large blue ones with a red circle denoting what to put in each one. And this was from Councillor Jan Warwick, Portfolio Holder for Neighbourhoods and Environment, WCC.
This letter is from Steve Harborne of Worthy Lane, Winchester. He heads it, City needs car parks, not offices. Sir, I write to express concern over plans to redevelop the Cattle Market / Worthy Lane car park in the station approach plan. This is of huge significance to local people, yet the council has provided limited opportunities for them to make their views known, seemingly prioritising the wishes of developers over those who live and work in the locality. The plan involves the creation of a commercial office hub and housing on the cattle market and redevelopment of the Carfax site. But does Winchester need more office space when so many offices remain empty? Would the loss of the cattle market car park improve parking provision and help cut congestion in the city? The council's own consultation showed 65% of respondents against consolidation, in inverted commas, of car parks onto fewer sites, yet it seems intent on doing just that. Hampshire Chamber of Commerce and Winchester Action on Climate Change, as well as respondents to the consultation, stress the value of the cattle market as a vital gateway car park, taking pressure off the city centre. Its loss would add to existing peak hour congestion on Worthy Lane and Andover Road. As well as serving residents, who would otherwise have to park elsewhere in Hyde, the site is of archaeological significance. It also hosts weekly car boot sales, much valued by many people. The site could be improved. Enhanced landscaping and better signage would cost little, while more imaginative pricing would encourage Saturday use for shoppers and visitors, given its short distance to the centre. With the deadline of April the 4th for comments on the local plan, readers can write to Strategic Planning at the City Council, or email, and that, given that it's April the 4th today, seems to be the only option, email ldf@winchester.gov.uk. Steve Harborne, Worthy Lane, Winchester.
The diversion of Andover Road. Sir, since my letter on the subject of Andover Road, I have had a response from the Carla Holmes team setting out their rationale for diverting the road through the new development. It was a detailed reply which referred me to the Carla website, recommended reading for all who have views on the subject. The case given is as follows. It will ensure the development can be sustainable and integrated with Winchester City Centre and surrounding communities. A study showed no significant adverse impact arising from the proposals. It provides the opportunity to create Andover Walk, a new pedestrian, cycle-friendly green corridor and linear parkway. It allows for the expansion of Henry Beaufort and the safety benefits of cars no longer travelling at 40 to 50 miles per hour outside the school. I'm left with some unanswered questions. Why do we have to divert this road through the new housing development in order to achieve their first and third objectives? Why, when transport planners the world over are segregating through traffic from local, are we proposing the reverse? The consultation process in 2011 seems to have attracted almost entirely people from the area, a few hundred. The many thousands of us who regularly use the Andover Road to reach the A34 don't appear to be represented in the feedback, although even from this small group there were concerns expressed. Why not? Am I expected to be reassured by a study which showed no significant adverse impact, that the presence of drivers impatient to reach the A34 in amongst local residents driving to the shops is going to make us all feel happier? I'm left, like a previous writer, with the disturbing question of whether there is an agenda which has not been declared. Ron Owen, Wickmark, Winchester.
Don't consign bus users to margins. Sir, re the bus station, or lack of it, at Silver Hill. I note that the revised plans exhibited at the Guildhall show public parking located about 30 metres average walking distance undercover to the surrounding shops. Bus users, however, will have to walk up to 100 metres or more in the open across traffic to the same shops. Apart from the possible access concerns, this additional distance is a considerable disadvantage. Also, they will have to wait in shelters along Friars Gate, one of Winchester's busiest, most dismal and congested streets, so will be exposed to health risks from noise and air pollution. A bus station, imaginatively designed, with clear scheduling, CCTV, seating, cafe and public conveniences, can increase bus use. Electronic navigation systems and related aids to mobility can assist people with these challenges and may even be necessary under the Equality Act. We also need to appeal not only to people dependent on buses, nearly 30% of the population, but car users who believe that an alternative to their car is essential if we are to reduce air pollution and carbon use. The present bus routes provide unrivalled bus, taxi and community vehicle access. Many other cities have frequent public transport service integrated with pedestrian and shopping space. With the potential introduction of hybrid electric powered buses, it seems this aspect has many advantages and should be continued instead of consigning bus users to the margins. I trust that our councillors will critically review the proposals. They will shape the city centre for the next century at least. It would be good to get it right. John Shune, Sparkford Close, Winchester.
Sally Eames writes from Charles Close, Abbots Barton, Winchester, says, "Developers don't know their history. Sir Henderson's, the firm that wants to close the bus station, should read the history of King Alfred buses. Our family worked for them, our mum during the Second World War when she was changing wheels, our dad after that war was a conductor, while our uncle was an inspector. The company are not for the public, but for themselves. It is not right that the bus station is to be knocked down. What about the public? Upgrade it, not flatten it." Sally Eames, Charles Close, Abbots Barton.
No turning back on Silver Hill scheme. Sir, the City of Winchester Trust has engaged with the developers and their architects from the very start of the Silver Hill project. We have agreed and disagreed with them over numerous aspects and appreciated their cooperative response and the changes that have been made over the years. Given the requirements of the eventual brief, we recognise that there was no turning back on the content, but there were aspects we believe could be changed and therefore objected to the previous application for a number of reasons, of which the most serious were the appearance of bursting at the seams, the further degradation of Friar's Gate, the tenement nature of the housing and some detailing. However, we always believed the concept was appropriate for an area so much in need of regeneration and were pleased that Henderson's came to the rescue after the fall of Thornfield, with the advantage that their interest is long-term investment. We were also relieved that the original architects and project director were retained, having become convinced of their commitment to Winchester. Henderson's review of the scheme, with Stagecoach's decision that their traditional bus station is no longer appropriate, has led to changes that have satisfied our previous objections. The bulk has been eased. Friar's Gate is to be transformed. The housing has been redesigned, and Winchester scale has been successfully introduced to the street elevations without pastiche. We shall continue our scrutiny of developing details, including adequacy of the linear bus centre, ticket offices, toilets, cafes, shelters with electronic information, street details, housing and parking, market stalls, energy, sustainability, etc. Michael Carden, Vice Chairman, City of Winchester Trust.
And from Bruce Edwards, Brassey Road, Winchester. Why no councillors at the exhibition? Sir, last Friday I visited the exhibition about the Silver Hill scheme at Winchester Guild Hall. There were people from the developers in attendance, but no city councillors. Such a pity. I'm sure I was not the only person there who would have welcomed an opportunity to discuss the plans with one of our elected representatives. Is it too much to expect they could have drawn up a rota for the 3 days to ensure at least one of their number was present at all times? Or am I asking too much of them? Bruce Edwards, Brassey Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
And that concludes letters to the editor. Thank you very much to all the contributors. It's time for your say. We asked passers-by, Chesil Street car park may be sacrificed for care homes. What do you think of the parking in the city? Graham has the replies.
Thank you. The first one is Tom Church, who's 65 and retired, of Cathedral View, Highcliffe. He said, "The car parks in the city centre all seem quite well used. The people in my street, in the new flats, cannot get permits, so they must use Chesil Street. It's ridiculous to shut the Chesil Street car park. Next up is 23-year-old Chantel Williams, a shift manager of Stanmore. She said, "My husband uses Chesil Street and the Upper Brook Street car park. If they start getting rid of them, where are they going to park? The only main one is the Brooks." Then there's Dave Brand, who's 65, retired of Berwick Road Week. He said, "Unless you get here at the right time of day, you're struggling to get a space. Personally, it wouldn't be the end of the world for me if they closed one." And finally, Jenny Corbett, who's 64, a retired accountant of Full Flood, said, "You have got to be careful not to kill off trade. If they can't park, people won't come into town, and they'll go on to outlying stores. It's a difficult one. You have to strike a balance."
And now we're going to go back through the years for our historical items, beginning with 25 years ago, read by Albie.
April 7th, 1989. Hampshire hog statue unveiled. A pig stole the limelight as Hampshire County Council embarked on a year of celebration to mark its 100th birthday. The council had commissioned sculptor David Keep to create something that would symbolise a century of civic pride in Hampshire. On Monday, the resulting £6,000 life-size bronze statue of the inimitable Hampshire hog was unveiled by Council Chairman Mrs. Sue Bartlett outside Council headquarters at the castle in Winchester. The man who made it, a former resident of Hampshire, said it was good to be back in the county. Mr. Kemp added, "Bronze can last for over 1,000 years, but how long will Hampshire County Council be with us?" Almost 40% of patients in the Winchester Health District waited more than a year for treatment last year. Figures released this weekend reveal. In December last year, the total number on waiting lists for non-emergency operations stood at 2,750, of which 1,088, or 39.6%, had been waiting for over 12 months.
Back 50 years ago.
April the 4th, 1964. Fears over new developments. It was obvious that imminent population increases in the county were very much on the minds of members when the Hampshire branch of the Council for the Preservation of Rural England held its annual meeting at the Guildhall, Winchester, on Thursday. The recent southeast study was frequently mentioned, as were the constant threats of development to Hampshire's countryside. The secretary, Miss K.M.R. Kenyon, spoke of new town and expansion projects in Hampshire. Quote, "The problem is one of great urgency," unquote, she continued. The coastal areas of Hampshire were in particular danger. And a second item, which is a letter. "Sir, I have always considered it very strange that in a climate such as ours, it is the custom to provide facilities for outdoor sport, yet few or none at all for the indoor variety. I am confident that the ratepayers of Winchester and the surrounding villages would give generously towards a public fund for the building of a fine sports centre, including an indoor heated pool, and that the City Council and RDC, once assured of the public's desire, would support the scheme handsomely."
Now back 100 years.
Yes, exactly. April the 14th, 1914. And two items, the first of which is improvements for city streets. Winchester Town Council. The ex-major moved the recommendation to apply for sanction to borrow £1,546 for improvements in the High Street, Parchment Street, Market Street and Upper Brook Street by the laying of wooden blocks. He remarked that they had already experienced great benefit from the laying of these blocks in the High Street. The scheme was opposed at the time, but all would agree now that it had been a great success and of benefit to the city. The improvements now recommended were of the greatest importance, where, like Parchment Street, the pavements were narrow. And the second item is from, it's Lady Laura Ridding, writing from the old house Wanston, Sutton Scotney, to The Times as follows. "Sir, Nothing provokes temptation to passive resistance in the mind of a ratepayer more powerfully than the sight of the wanton destruction of the lovely roadside wild shrubs and undergrowth, which used to be the glory of our Hampshire highways and byways. Thorns, dog roses, spindle trees, wayfarers' trees, clematis, gorse, dogwood, and a score of other beautiful shrubs are fast disappearing. This mania for reducing wild nature to a monotonous ugliness is heartbreaking. Some of the roads in this district are being shaved so that they will soon resemble the bareness of a convict's head.
And finally, back 200 years ago, read by Albie.
Yes, there are two items here from the 4th of April, 1814. And the first item comes under the heading, Will Could Be Sign of Insanity. We stated in a former paper that the will of the late William Wright, Esquire, was expected to be the subject of litigation. The following, amongst others, is a codicil in his own handwriting and is expected to be much relied on as tending to an inference of his insanity. Quote, having been subject for some years to an occasional swelling and acute pains, I desire that my body may be opened and the state of the bladder inspected and examined. It may perhaps be seen and judged whether my habit and bodily infirmities enabled me to struggle and fight with needy hackney writers and swindlers, with ferocious French spies, and with desperate Irish blacklegs, retained in the vile and wretched pay of the French Republic. And the second item. At the Stafford Assizes on Saturday last, John Nicholson was convicted of having sent a threatening anonymous letter to Mr. Levitt of Wichner in that county. The prisoner, it appeared, was a poacher, and having been warned off Mr. Levitt's grounds, he sent him a letter, bidding him take care he had not a ball through his head. Mr. Justice Dallas, in passing sentence of death on the prisoner, commented severely on the demon-like offence of putting a man in constant terror of death from an unknown hand.
OK, we're back to the future again. Actually back to the present, not back to the future. And it's time for First Person, read by Nikki.
And this by Judith Hennigan. Let's hear it for bread, fuel for the family. It's the weekend and all four children are at home for the first time since Christmas. The older two are revising for university exams, pale and muttering over impenetrable-looking textbooks. Number three is outside trying to get the lawnmower started after its winter hibernation in a waterlogged shed, while the youngest is hunkered down on the sofa watching the latest Hunger Games DVD for the ninth time in broad daylight. Me, I should be marking papers, but instead I'm baking bread. I should preface this by explaining that I'm not a good cook. I destroy pastry with my big hands. My cakes don't rise and I burn anything I grill or fry, which at least means the smoke alarm gets tested on a regular basis. I first learned to cook when I lived in a house of 18 hungry adults. Each month we loaded up our minibus at the cash and carry and supplemented this with a weekly sack of veg from the farm shop. It all went into soups and stews, anything that could sit on the stove top and feed all comers for 3 days at a stretch. No fine dining, no finessing, and absolutely no sauteing. Nowadays, I'm only feeding five, but food disappears as soon as it comes through the door, and sometimes while it is still in the boot of the car. Cereal, coffee, apples, milk, biscuits, these items are devoured on a scale that seems industrial or even biblical. We ate lunch an hour ago, but I know it is a matter of minutes before someone wanders through, hunting for a bite to keep them going until dinner. This is where bread making comes in. First, a 500-gram bag of whole grain is a whole lot cheaper than a supermarket loaf. Second, we don't need bread with added preservatives because it won't hang around for long. Third, I can now prepare a batch of dough in less time than it takes me to nip out to Tesco Express. I think I finally found my inner baker. The joy of kneading dough, of course, is that I can be as heavy-handed as I like. There is no better way to let go of stress. It's a little piece of mindfulness without the navel-gazing and raisin-chewing, exactly what I need when the rest of the day has gone ragged round the edges. Here comes the grass-cutting child, smelling of petrol, a bit cross because the mower won't start. "Can I have the crust?" he asks, hacking off a wonky angle. "Just to keep me going." Bread isn't fashionable foodstuff right now. Too many carbs, not enough protein, empty calories and so on. But I'd like to stand up for bread. You can have it with anything. Jam, hummus, peas and ketchup, or a dollop of yesterday's bolognese. Fuel for the family. Bliss.
Right, now it's editorial comment read by Graham.
Thank you. They say a good scheme, but questions remain. By and large, Silver Hill is a good scheme, a much-needed rejuvenation of an underused part of Winchester, only yards from the city centre. It evolved from Stagecoach considering the future of its bus station as far back as the 1980s, and delays since have been frustrating. Some 600 people attended the public exhibition, called at short notice at the Guildhall last weekend, where the developers, Henderson, revealed their latest plans. The proposals look impressive, even if architects, Allies and Morrison appear overly smitten with creating an Amsterdam look. The future of a bus station has been well reported, but there are other important changes. The cut in the number of homes, but with an increase in their size. More private parking, and the likely removal of all social housing. Homes for rent should have made up 35% of the flats. Yet the exhibition made little or no mention of how the proposals have altered, encouraging a belief that Henderson is not being fully open or taking the public seriously. The changes will surely be approved, not least because the planning authority, the council, is Henderson's partner. Healthy local democracy depends on open discussion of all the facts and their implications, rather than a glossy lip service.
And for this week's announcements, we have a message from our chairman, John Richards. It's a date for your diary. All listeners, friends and volunteers are invited to attend the Winchester Talking News AGM for 2014. And it's going to be on Tuesday, the 6th of May at 2 p.m. in the Littleton Millennium Memorial Hall. And there's going to be a talk by Malcolm Wells, MBE, and he's the national speaker of Canine Partners, a registered charity which assists disabled people to enjoy greater independence and a better quality of life through the help of specially trained dogs. And the Winchester Talking News AGM will be followed by afternoon tea. And now we're going to look at what's on. Well, from the 5th to the 21st of April, it's Step Into Spring at Staunton County Park, Havant. Normal admission applies and a small charge applies for some crafts and activities. Meet the newborns down on the farm and have a go at our spring trail or our seasonal crafts. And for further information about that, it's phoning 023 9245 3405 or go to www.hants.gov.uk/Staunton. From the 11th of April, on the 11th of April, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m, there's battle lines at Gosport Discovery Centre, High Street Gosport, and that will be £10. And it's looking at the region's experiences of war. Battle Lines is a trilogy of short plays exploring the way three wars have shaped lives of generations. And for further information and tickets, 023 9252 3463 or www.hants.gov.uk/GDC. On the 20th and the 21st of April, the Sealed Knot Civil War Action Group will be at Basing House, and that's at Barton's Lane, or Basing, Basingstoke, and they'll step back in time and experience the drama of English Civil War at the historically important site of Basing House, a great event for all the family. Normal admissions apply to Basing House. For further information, 01256 463 965 or www.basinghouse.org.uk. And there's some open gardens over this particular period. Gardens are open for the National Garden Scheme. Children are free. For more details, visit www.ngs.org.uk. For example, every Monday, January the 6th to December the 1st, excluding bank holidays, the Mill at Gordleton, Silver Street. That's in Sway and Lymington. Every Wednesday, Beech and Wood Farm, Odium. Every Friday and Sunday, April the 4th and 6th, then that's at Christchurch Road, Winchester. Sunday, April the 6th, probably a bit late for that now, but Sunday, April the 13th, Bramdean House, Bramdean, a beautiful 5-acre plantsman's garden on Chalk. And finally, Sunday, April the 13th, Old Thatch and the Millennium Barn, Spratt's House, Spratt's Hatch Lane, Winchfield. And that's all of what's on at the moment. And now we're going back to items of general news, starting with one read by Albie.
Girls in Cup Final Double. And this is hockey. Winchester ladies have reached the final of two prestigious Women's Hockey Cup competitions. They will face Sussex champions Eastbourne in England Hockey's Vars National Final at Nottingham University on Sunday, April 20th, and a fortnight later take on Trojans in the Hampshire Cup Final at Bournemouth on May 5th. Winchester missed out on Snow's Group Hampshire League success this term, finishing 2 points adrift of eventual winners Fareham, who inflicted their only defeat of the season when they beat them 3-2 in January, ironically after the City Girls had led 2-0 at one stage. But success in the Cups has more than compensated for the disappointment on missing out on a South Women's League promotion ticket. The Winchester girls have been in impressive form in the EH Cup, scoring 17 goals in the 4 ties leading into the Beeston final. They beat Harrow 3-0 with goals by Rachel Atkins, Laura Pitfield and Rose Eville. Then Truro 4-1, where Lisa Crack, 2 goals, Kate Boniface and Holly Cameron were on target. Winchester really hit form in the quarter-final, smashing Stratford 7-0 through Lisa Crack, 2 goals, Kate Boniface, Holly Cameron, Kenzie Benali and Debs Young. Their passport to the national final came with a tight 3-2 victory over Lincoln Roses, where Kate Stockham, Georgie Kent and Holly Cameron shared the goal-scoring limelight. And there's a photograph of 14 of the full squad all lined up in a goal mouth wearing really big smiles. And so they should.
Village gives Postie a big send-off. Villagers made a surprise delivery to their popular postman on the eve of his retirement. Residents of Houghton clubbed together to collect £915 for Postie Paul Geary, which they presented to him at a party held in his honour at the Boot pub. There was also a special cake in the shape of a red postal van made by village baker Fiona Evans. Mr Geary, who retired on his 65th birthday last Tuesday, thought he was joining a handful of villagers at the pub for a farewell drink, but found more than 60 people there ready to give him a rousing send-off after 26 years delivering their mail. He admitted to being touched and surprised by the turnout and said, "It's nice when people turn out to say thank you. There were a lot of people there I would never have expected to see." One of the organisers of the event, Maureen Stevens, said, "Paul is a lovely man, always ready to stop for a chat." The postman, whose rural round also included Bossington, Horsebridge, Brook and Compton, was presented with a card filled with tributes. And there's a very good photograph of Paul looking a lot younger than his 65 years. But the cake, I have to say, is the most perfect replica of a red old sort of Morris postal van, with also next to it an old-fashioned red letterbox, done quite beautifully by Fiona Evans.
Air pollution hits the south. The worst air pollution in 60 years has swept through southern England, threatening the health of the sick and vulnerable. The Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs warned people to be braced for very high levels of air pollution over the next few days. The elevated levels have been caused by a combination of light southeasterly winds, the continental airflow, and dust, which has blown up from the Sahara Desert, a spokeswoman said. But the air pollution is expected to ebb away by tomorrow. However, people with heart and lung conditions have been warned to avoid strenuous activity and even consider wearing masks if going outside. This week, people found their cars to be covered in a light coating of red dust. The Met Office said that a large amount of sand and dust was swept up by storm winds in the Sahara Desert. And we haven't entirely escaped it today in the studio.
Poor at best, Dave tells how it is. Amid the disingenuous platitudes in professional football, it's refreshing to see the Winchester City boss calling it as he sees it. Dave Malone, the director of football at the Denplan Ground, commented on an internet forum shortly after the team's dismal 2-1 defeat to Whitchurch in the Wessex League last Thursday. He posted, "The end of the season can't come quickly enough for some, myself included. Injuries to key players have had an adverse effect, as has the reduction in our budget, but recent results and performances have been poor at best. No excuses, not good enough. Plans for next season are already underway. Rest assured that we will start next term in a stronger position than we end this one." And there's a photograph of City boss Dave Malone, who pulls no punches, looking very perplexed.
Dame's visit is morale booster for mill workers. Despite flood and structural damage, a Winchester landmark is celebrating the 10th anniversary of its rebirth. Winchester City Mill needs essential repair after flooding beneath the ground floor stopped the wheels turning, but that did not stop the millers celebrating its 10th year of milling stone ground flour. The occasion was marked by a visit from Dame Helen Gosh, Director General of the National Trust. The mill on Bridge Street, which at 270 years is one of the oldest working water mills in the country, had previously undergone a 12-year restoration programme by the National Trust after standing motionless for 90 years. Dame Helen said, "I enjoyed looking around the mill and hearing from the volunteer millers and bakers about their work, as well as sampling some of their baking. It was also wonderful to see the CCTV film of the otters, who are regular visitors. Despite the recent flooding, spirits were high, and we hope the mill will be back in full working order very soon." Once repairs are completed, the mill will once more become a hive of activity, with its 16 millers grinding corn every weekend and Wednesday, whilst other volunteers package the flour. Anne Aldridge said, "Dame Helen's visit had raised the spirits of volunteers. It was lovely to have something to celebrate last week, and a visit from the Trust Director General has really boosted morale. We can't wait to get the huge water wheel back in action. We've had a tough time at the mill recently, but whilst the flood damage means we've had to stop temporarily milling, most of the mill remains open for business, so we can continue to welcome visitors. Winchester City Mill continues its celebrations with events throughout the year, including a Cadbury Easter egg trail from April the 18th to the 21st. And there's pictures of all the millers in their white aprons, looking wonderfully old-fashioned, actually, and the mill itself with the water obviously thundering out underneath it. No gentle flow from there at the moment.
I suppose related to milling, really, this is a story of the Tichborne Dole, a tradition over 900 years old. And there's a photograph of two members of staff in their white coats distributing flour to the waiting villagers. Lest Lady Maybella's curse kick in again, residents of Titchborne and Cheriton gathered for the annual dole distribution last week. Huge troughs of flour were blessed by a priest before 1 gallon for each adult and half a gallon for each child was ladled into bags of every description, throwing a white haze into the air. 9 centuries ago, the philanthropic aristocrat Lady Mabella wanted to ensure her miserly husband, Sir Roger Titchborne, would give food to the poor after she died of the wasting disease which was crippling her. Living up to his reputation, but also erring on the melodramatic, her grotty spouse said he'd contribute the corn grown each year from all the land she could crawl round, clutching a blazing torch. Lady Mabella managed to circumnavigate 23 acres of a field on a hill to the north of the village, still known as the Crawls to this day. Then, to prevent Sir Roger from going back on his word, she applied a curse, whereby stopping the dole would result in the demise of the House of Titchborne, which it nearly did when the practice was stopped in the late 18th century. The dole was hastily revived and has persisted ever since.
Burglars take war veterans' medals. Police are investigating a burglary after medals belonging to a war veteran were stolen. A property in Wales Street, Winchester, was broken into sometime between February the 20th and February the 27th, and various items were taken, including the 3 medals. They were the 1939-45 Star, African Star, and Italian Star. They had paperwork with them. Anyone with information should call PC Andrew Spooner on 101 or Crime Stoppers on 0800 555 111. That's PC Spooner 101, Crime Stoppers 0800 555 111.
Cash already in place to build flats over car park. A survey on plans for a new care home in the heart of the city has been branded a whitewash. Winchester City Council is eyeing the Chessel Street surface car park for development, and central government has already earmarked cash for the project. Civic chiefs recently consulted residents, with 243 questionnaires completed from 1,200 letters sent out. Dozens of residents were at the Guildhall to hear feedback from the survey, which was conducted by architects and design consultants John Thompson and Partners. Many were angry at what they believed to be a lack of consideration given to alternative sites, and officers' claims that the car park is underused. They were also unhappy at suggestions that nearby Chessel Street multi-storey car park could compensate for any loss of parking spaces. Catherine Kelsey, 50, garden designer of Chessel Street, said, "It doesn't feel like a consultation at all. It feels like a whitewash, a fait accompli. I'm sceptical about the timing. I think they want to shove a spade in the ground somewhere quickly to get the money." The meeting heard that by 2030, the number of over 75s in Winchester was set to increase by 85%. In response, the council has pledged to boost its provision for extra care by 20 to 25 extra places per 1,000. Figures also suggest that in St John, All Saints, St Michael's and St Bartholomew wards, around 11% of people are over 75. Liz Cooper, chairman of the St Giles Hill Residents Association, said, "I think one has to consider whether this is actually the best site. It is very congested, bound on 3 sides by roads. I would not think this the safest and most accessible site for the elderly." Councillor Robert Sanders was at the feedback presentation and attended a recent residents' meeting on the matter. "I think the strong reaction is simply because the plans have come out before public consultation took place," he said. Councillor Rob Humby, also at the meeting, said, "I think anything you try to do in Winchester creates a lot of interest. My purpose of coming here was to listen. No decision has been made."
9 weeks of disruption ahead at Stanmore Lane. Works to improve the major junction of Stanmore Lane and Romsey Road are due to start on Monday, April the 7th. Hampshire County Council's £150,000 project will see the existing layout changed, with a second traffic lane added to the junction approach, as well as the removal of the pedestrian crossing. A new uncontrolled crossing is to be installed further to the south of the crossing point. The works are expected to last around 9 weeks, and Stanmore Lane will be closed northbound from April the 7th to the 18th, while it is widened. Temporary traffic lights will be installed and a diversion route will be in place while these works are completed. Hampshire County Council's Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, Councillor Sean Woodward, commented, "The improvements to Stanmore Lane Junction will help relieve traffic congestion on a key access route into Winchester city centre, as well as provide a new pedestrian crossing point which is further away from the junction."
Prince's Mead was there first. Winchester Preparatory School, Prince's Mead, has been ahead of the game over a vital piece of life-saving equipment. The school has had a defibrillator since 2010. Prince's Mead contacted the Chronicle after an article on March the 20th listed the local secondary schools without the equipment. Many are now reviewing their policy after Sam Mangoro, 16, was saved by a defibrillator at Mountbatten School, Romsey, in February.
Brothers charged with murder of newsagent. Savage murder cast pall over Eastleigh. Two brothers have appeared in court charged with the savage murder of Eastleigh newsagent Choudhury Zishan. Jonathan McKinley, 22, and Samuel McKinley, 25, both of no fixed abode, were remanded into custody yesterday by magistrates at Southampton. They are due to appear at Winchester Crown Court tomorrow. Mr. Zishan, 35, was battered to death outside Newmarket newsagents in High Street, Eastleigh, in the early hours of Sunday. The McKinleys were arrested at a flat in Monk's Way, Eastleigh, on Sunday, just hours after Mr. Zishan was attacked in the street outside his home. He suffered severe head injuries. Paramedics tried to save the popular newsagent at the scene before an ambulance took him to Southampton General Hospital, where he later died. Neighbour Trudy Davis, 37, said, "I woke up to banging on the door and was shocked to see paramedics doing CPR on someone. You could see them pumping his chest and I thought he had been hit by a car." The attack happened as Mr. Zishan left his High Street home at around 4:30 a.m. to collect the Sunday papers for his customers. He lived above the shop with his 6 months pregnant wife, Sabina, and their son, 5. The charges were brought against the brothers on Tuesday night. Mr. Zishan's customers have been paying tributes to him, describing him as a pillar of the community. A sea of floral tributes adorned the forecourt of a Southampton newsagent's, one of 5 that he owned, while customers broke down in tears as they paid their respects at Isaac's News in Queensway. Anne O'Brien, 77, of Queensway, said, "He would greet me with a hug all the time and ask how I was. To hear this happened is horrible." Mr. Zishan's business partner, Barry Isaac, 64, told how he heard something had happened at around 6 a.m. on Sunday. "I presumed he was sick or unwell and came to open up, but felt to myself something wasn't quite right. I just can't believe it's happened. He was in the wrong place at the wrong time." Mr. Isaac hailed Mr. Zishan as a lovely man, adding, "You just couldn't ask for a better person." And there's a photograph of a young man laying his floral tributes outside the agents, news agents, and with many others there already.
Barton Farm clears the final obstacle. Planners OK biggest scheme since 1980s. The final hurdle has been cleared for work to start on Winchester's largest development in 30 years. Planning chiefs last Thursday approved the finishing touches to plans for the first phase of a 2,000-home development at Barton Farm, north of the city. At a special meeting in the Guildhall, more than 50 members of the public got a glimpse of how the new homes will look. The meeting heard details of the design code, principles by which the developers, Carla, will decide the look and layout of the first 430 private and affordable homes, as well as the public open spaces to the south and north of the site. Councillors voted overwhelmingly in favour of the plans, with a consensus that the documents presented to them by architects and master planners John Thompson and Partners were of a high standard. The approval also includes the transfer of land to Hampshire County Council for construction of a new primary school using cash from CALA. Robert Westwood, CALA's project director, said, "We welcome the decision on the first phase of properties at Barton Farm. Our proposals will not only provide much-needed homes in Winchester, but will also generate significant investment in local facilities and services. Our focus is now on delivering a scheme that Winchester can be proud of." But there was concern from councillors over the distribution of the affordable homes. Councillor Therese Evans voted to allow the application, but said, "This is a flagship development, and the affordable houses are all in groups, and I do not think that is acceptable." Councillor Barry Lipscomb, who, along with Councillor Raymond Pearce, was one of two councillors to vote against the application, said, "I fear that if I vote for this, it sends out a message that I will vote for it elsewhere in the site." Construction work is due to start on site in late 2014, with the first homes expected to be released for sale in the summer of 2015. However, there is still widespread unhappiness about the diversion of Andover Road through the development. But CALA has rejected a review because it would be obliged to restart the whole planning application. And there are two illustrations. One is an artist's impression of a street scene in the new development. And there are the houses set back from what I suppose will be the infamous replacement to the Andover Road. Grass on either side and trees looking nice and open and airy. And there's an aerial impression of the Barton Farm site altogether. It's, in general, it's triangular with lots of open space in the middle, with development along the three sides, a bit of extra development in two of the corners, and a road going through the middle, which it's not sure whether it's, can't see whether this is houses going along it or trees, but either side of it, in the very centre of the development, it seems to be open space, but you can't actually make out where the new road might go.
Villagers warned after bank card scams. Residents of Coldon Common are warning others against bogus telephone calls after six people were scammed. On the 22nd of March, six residents aged between 42 and 94 were contacted by someone claiming to be a police officer who was attempting to obtain their bank details. A 63-year-old man was tricked into disclosing details and handing over his bank card to a courier. He subsequently discovered that £1,500 had been stolen. The victim received a call from a man claiming to be from the Visa Fraud Department and was told his card had been used fraudulently. He was convinced to hand over his bank details, and while he was on the phone, a man arrived to collect his bank cards, which he had placed in an envelope. Detective Inspector Sue Orr said, "We want to warn residents that these requests are not genuine and that no police officer or bank would operate in this manner. Anyone who receives a suspicious call is urged not to give any details to the caller and report the matter to the police immediately. Any courier companies or taxi drivers that may have been asked to pick up such packages in the area are also urged to report this to the police.
Flood risks remain. River levels are receding, but the Environment Agency says some Hampshire communities remain at risk of flooding. A spokesman said if we receive significantly above average rainfall with several episodes of high daily rainfall totals, then flooding will return to those areas which are currently seeing an improvement. They are King Somborne, Little Somborne, Pitton, West Titherley, Broughton, Nether Wallop, the Candovers, still closed, Old Alsford, Bishop Sutton, Bramdean, Cheriton, Hensting, Twyford, Headbourneworthy, Littleton, Hursley, Finchdean, Dean Lane End, and Denmead. And another little article, Coffee Morning for Autism Charity. A coffee morning will be held on Thursday, April the 10th, from 9:30 a.m. to noon, in aid of Autism Hampshire at Sylvester's House, Hill Houses Lane, Cheriton. Victoria Parker is raising funds to support her sponsored abseil of the Spinnaker Tower on June the 21st. Home produce, including award-winning marmalade, will be for sale, and there will be a raffle. All are welcome, and I shall be there too.
County wants your views on possible cuts to bus services. Passengers are being asked what public services could still be subsidised in a cost-cutting exercise. In a review of bus and community transport services that receive financial support from Hampshire County Council, a consultation is underway to collect the views and preferences of both passengers and the wider community. County Hall needs to reduce spending by about £1.25 million and £1.5 million from public and community transport spending. It's part of the 12% overall savings the council needs to make as a result of its government grant being cut by 43% over 4 years. The council spends £4.7 million on supporting local bus services and ferries across Hampshire that are not commercially viable for private operators to run. A further £1 million is spent on supporting community transport services, and £13.4 million on the National Concessionary Fares Scheme. Councillor Sean Woodward, Executive Member for Economy, Transport and Environment, said the County Council has significant budget reductions to make, and this requires us to look at all areas of spending, including the limited resources we have to support public and community transport services. Areas of public transport the council currently supports include subsidising local bus services, which do not attract enough passengers to cover the cost of providing the service and are therefore not commercially viable for the bus companies to run. There are also enhancements to the National Concessionary Fare Schemes for older and disabled residents and publishing bus timetable information. The consultation is open until May the 31st, and we very much want to hear from many people as possible to inform this review. A number of options are being considered to achieve the savings, including reducing or ceasing support for Sunday services and evening services after 7 p.m, stopping the 9 a.m. early start for the older person's bus pass, reducing the frequency and days of service, replacing bus services with taxi shares or community transport services, and reducing the amount of printed timetables. There is a small photograph of Councillor Sean Woodward, and also a copy of the bit of the Broadway immediately outside the Guildhall with a carefully parked in chevron line of double-decker Blue Star buses, which as far as I know don't actually go down the Broadway like that. Anyway, passengers have a chance, it says, to have their say on transport across Hampshire. Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be any reference to where you address your concerns or views. Maybe it can be picked up from one of the other items that we've been reading today, but your local councillor will know.
Trees, a constant reminder. A trip to the city soon becomes a journey down memory lane for one Winchester man. For some, it would be easy to miss the row of 25 beech trees near Cheesfoot Head on the A272. But for others, they are symbolic of a world war and a family with deep roots in England's former capital. As 2014 marks the centenary of the Great War, Chris Norgate, 65, is remembering his grandfather, who planted the trees before leaving for the war in 1914. James Norgate returned home in 2002 from war in South Africa, before serving in the Hampshire Regiment during World War I and as a sergeant in the Home Guard during World War II. We don't know exactly when the trees were planted, but think it was in between 1902 and 1914. When he returned from the war in 1918, he worked on the Itchen as a water bailiff. My father followed in his footsteps at roughly the same place, which is why our family was born here. Chris, an ex-policeman and former design and technology technician at King's School, recalls his grandfather entertaining guests at Avington House by showing them dry fly fishing. One of my lasting memories was when he first showed me how to fish on the river. He also used to talk about the war and his experiences when we were around the table. That's how I'll always remember him, because those are the experiences I had with him when he was alive. James lived with Chris and his family until his death in 1962, and Chris says his memory is still treasured. Chris doesn't have to venture out of the house to see the trees. On leaving King's School a year ago, good friend and colleague John Butterworth presented him with an oil painting of the site, which hangs in his house in Dell Road and captures the trees perfectly. And there are three photographs with this article. One is of Chris Norgate, pictured with the beech tree row in the background. And another photograph taken from a lay-by on the 272 with cars going along the road, showing the view from the motorist's point of view. And the third photograph is of Chris Norgate's grandfather, James, who planted the trees near Cheesfoot Head. And the remarkable thing about the two photographs, the one of Chris shows him posed in front of the trees, casually dressed, open-neck shirt, bareheaded, jeans, but smart. And the other of the grandfather, James, in regulation cap, suit, tie, button collar, looking very smart too.
When the soldiers came to Cheriton, Sealed Knot recreates pivotal point in Civil War. Dressed in full costume, an armed force marched across Hampshire at the weekend to mark the 370th anniversary of a famous battle. The Tilliers Regiment of the Sealed Knot completed a 26-mile march between Basing and Bishop Sutton near Alresford on Saturday to commemorate the 370th anniversary of the Battle of Cheriton in 1644. An estimated 2,000 men died in what was a pivotal point in the English Civil War, with Cromwell's Parliamentarian forces defeating Royalist troops. The two-day march included an overnight stop in the village of Weald, finishing at the Ship Inn, Bishop Sutton, on Sunday. The march saw reenactors joined by standard-bearers from the Royal British Legion at 1:30 p.m. when they marched to the Battle of Cheriton Memorial, where there was a wreath-laying ceremony followed by a service conducted by Rector of Cheriton, the Reverend Graham Bowkett. Around 100 people gathered as two children in periodic costume of the English Civil War laid the wreath on the memorial stone with a one-minute silence. City Councillor Harry Verney, who represents Cheriton, wore his police medal for 31 years' service and said, "I saw the British Legion had theirs on, so I thought I'd put mine on. I thought it was tremendous. It was very historic to be there, almost 370 years to the day, and it was well organised. I look forward to the reenactment in June, which is always good fun. And we have a lot of photographs, starting with one of the landowner, Gillian Gray Knight, with the Reverend Graham Bucket, at the memorial service, with a table and the furled banners and the regimental drums, obviously saying their prayers or whatever. And another one of the solemn moment before the royalist reenactors go into battle, all wearing their armour-plated body armour and helmets, which are sort of almost bonnet-like, amazing, beautifully done. And the young boys laying the wreath on the stone, which is in the shape of the George Cross with white flowers and the red flowers in the cross. And a picture of Councillor Harry Verney with his medal, and a rather dashing man with a swooping hat with feathers, ostrich feathers, draped round it. And the last picture is of the pikemen forming rank before marching into battle, again with their body armour, helmets, pikes and furled banners.
City U-turn over status of Alresford car parks. Winchester City Council has done a U-turn on the status of two Alresford car parks, which it had hoped to protect as community assets. Land at both the Mid-Hampshire Railway and Perrin School has been delisted and taken off the local authority's website, but council taxpayers could end up paying the legal fees that the Watergrass line ran up, fighting its case at a review held at the Guildhall last month. The Railway Charities Bill has just been submitted. Under recent legislation, pubs, play areas and other public facilities can be ring-fenced to prevent a quick sale without those living nearby first having an option to buy them. The city mistakenly registered the Railway Station Road car park as an asset of community value, following an application by Alresford Town Council. When its corporate director, Steve Tilbury, realised the nomination mistakenly included land the council owned, he judged the listing as unsuccessful, which will make it difficult legally to nominate the same place again for the next 5 years. A recent review of the listing of the Perrins car park concluded it should be delisted because its main use is not a community one. However, Alresford Town Council planning spokeswoman Margot Power said they still intended to reapply for the railway car park to be given community asset status. The Watergrass line may not always be there, and it, the car park, is part of the fabric of the town, she said.
City must not hide its Jewish heritage. Group claims Winchester history has been airbrushed. The airbrushing of the Jews from Winchester history could soon be rectified by a new group. There is no mention of the medieval Jews in either the City Museum or at the Great Hall, despite the important part they played in the 200 years prior to their expulsion from England in 1290 in an early example of ethnic cleansing. Winchester Castle even had a tower called the Jews' Tower, where they were imprisoned. Yet there is no mention of this in the permanent exhibition at the Great Hall, opened in the late 1990s. A Jewess, Licorisia, was one of the wealthiest women in 13th century England before her brutal murder. Perhaps the only trace of the city's Jewish heritage is in the name of one of its main roads, Jewry Street. Southampton University's Professor Tony Kushner has researched the issue and believes history has been airbrushed because it represents Winchester in an unfavourable light. Medieval Jewish Winchester is currently invisible. It is largely a negative story, and people do not like telling negative stories, but Winchester should start to tell this story, he said. Professor Kushner said the heritage industry preferred to tell positive and inclusive stories and has so ignored the treatment of the Jews. He alleged this omission, represents a major failure of imagination and, in effect, the second removal of the Jewish people. Now, a group has come together to highlight this hidden history with a new leaflet, a heritage trail, and perhaps even a plaque somewhere on Jewry Street. One member, Danny Habel, said it was a surprise that there was nothing in the major heritage institutions on Jewish history. The fact it is now called Jewish Street shows there was a history. It has been a bit concealed, but it is not a history to be proud of. In the Middle Ages, Jews were not considered to be people, he said. Commenting on the absence of the Jewish story, Patrick Davis, a senior member of the City of Winchester Trust, said, "I think it is a dreadful failing that it ought to be, and it ought to be rectified in the City Museum and the Great Hall as a matter of urgency." Until 1985, there was a small painting in the cathedral labelled Jew Boy, a highly derogatory term. Roy Perry, leader of Hampshire County Council, said, "The life of Jewish people in Winchester from the Middle Ages is well chronicled. The County Council has supported research as well as several publications about Jewish people living in Winchester before 1290.
A safe seat for Boris. Watch this space. One part of Hampshire would never be the same again. The bookies are confident that Boris Johnson, the flamboyant Mayor of London, is set to be the next MP for North West Hampshire, which covers Andover and Upper Test Valley. The current MP, Sir George Young, is standing down at the next general election, and the tousle-haired one is known to be keen to get back into the House. Indeed, Mr Johnson is already quoted at 7-2 for the seat, although Paddy Power has him earmarked for Louth and Horncastle, seat of Father of the House, Sir Peter Tapsell, at 6-1.
It's obviously, this is a seat not suitable for anyone. At least two people have been hurt by collapsing seats at John Pearson Hall in Alsford, the town council heard. Councillors approved a grant of £350 towards replacement of the dangerous seats. At least six have collapsed, with City Councillor Simon Cook one of the victims. The council also backed a grant of £1,100 to Alsford Town Trust towards the running costs of its minibus and the purchase of a new vehicle in 2018.
South West Trains Network Rail Alliance's summer advertising campaign last year has scooped three gongs at the 2014 Travel Marketing Awards, beating competition from the likes of Virgin Holidays, Expedia and Thompson. Their promotion offered passengers across the network the chance to benefit from a bargain £15 train trip on any weekend during August 2013. Over 90,000 passengers took it up.
Just to remind you that if there are any problems with your memory stick or your player, please contact Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. And remember to charge your player before sending it back, as it may not be fully charged. Also, lighting up time ends on Friday the 4th of April at 6:35 a.m. and begins at 7:43 p.m. And on Wednesday the 9th of April, it ends at 6:24 a.m. and begins at 7:51 p.m. And now we have the final extract for this week, read by Nikki.
Which we all think is rather relevant. The feature. Winchester's talking newspaper keeps the district's blind and visually impaired residents up to date with all the local news. But as Wesley Rock finds out, the voluntary service is keen to spread the word and help more people. Winchester's talking newspaper has an unusual HQ. Whilst undoubtedly a pleasant location, the funeral director's on Chessel Street is not the first place you'd think of for an office. As you enter the pristine frontage of Richard Steele and Partners, you can see down the corridor of St Mary's Chapel and the quaint Garden of Remembrance beyond. Still no hint of a recording studio, though. But tucked away in a side room, you'll find just that, as a group of volunteers gather each Friday to make sure that the city's visually impaired get their news. A small, cosy room has duvets on the walls to muffle external sound, while a green baize table has four microphones dotted around the side. Somehow, everything combines to give the place the feel of a 1940s war room. Yes, it does give the place the kind of war room feel, admitted John Richards, the chairman of Winchester Talking Newspaper. They're just duvets on the wall, but we take advice from two technical people who come in and assessed what our sound was like. Now, with these microphones, it is absolutely BBC quality sound. He adds, we've been here for 2 years now, and what you see here is the tip of the iceberg. There are more than 80 volunteers in all, but today's tip of the iceberg comprises four readers, Brian Woodruff, Vara Williams, Margaret Boyden, and Michael Wyard. Although unpaid, all four have been chosen because they've got the tools for the job. Their role is to read stories from the Hampshire Chronicle clearly and in an engaging manner, and they are encouraged to describe the pictures for their listeners, so they must have a strong command of language. All this they must do on site. That means get it right first time. No rehearsals, no warm-ups. Little wonder, then, that many readers, such as Vara, have a theatrical background. She said, the Chesil Theatre supplies quite a lot of speakers. It's because we can read aloud with clarity. A lot of the readers are retired teachers, too. The stories are cut out and glued onto cardboard to eliminate any rustling sounds and are recorded onto memory sticks as they are read out. A basic and easy-to-use MP3 stereo is provided for the listeners, and the memory sticks are sent out around the district on Fridays. By Saturday morning, people like 66-year-old Keith Hatter are eagerly awaiting the familiar sound of their talking newspaper in its plastic wallet hitting the mat. There is no way I can read a newspaper. It's imperative to have the local news, so I do look forward to it, he says. Mr. Hatter, who lives in Hyde, lost his sight about 10 years ago through an inherited degenerative eye disease called retinitis pigmentosa. I need it not only for the general news, but also because, as a visually impaired person, you get to know things going on in the town, like major roadworks or things that are likely to cause obstructions. For a visually impaired person, that's probably more important than for other people. To some people's thinking, the readings might have other benefits too. It does not include sport or advertising, but major incidents, death notices, and letters always make the cut. Recordings cost the listener nothing, and it costs them nothing to send back the memory sticks. Even the listening device is free. There are 500 talking newspapers in the country, and Winchester's has been running since the late 1980s. But numbers are in decline, and Mr. Richards thinks his group is down to around 100 listeners from 160 10 years ago. This is the pattern across the UK, he said. A lot more people are computer literate and can access their news online, and blind people tend to get out and about more today as well, I think. He also believes that advances in medical science mean that fewer people are losing their sight. But for now, the team on Chesil Street are still very much dedicated to delivering the stories we all want to hear. As Mr. Hatter puts it, they do a magnificent job and they give their time freely. I and everyone who receives the paper should be very grateful. Clearly, demand for the talking newspaper remains, and besides, it won't be going anywhere on Mr. Richards's watch. We will keep going as long as there is one listener in Winchester who will benefit, he added. To find out more about the talking newspaper, call 01962 808 085. That's 808 085. Or email volunteers@winchestertalkingnews.com, all lowercase. And there are some pictures of the reading team around the Green Bay's table, smiling Mr. Chairman, the John Richards, and the volunteer Michael Wyard at the microphone.
And that concludes the extracts for this week. Thank you to our editors, Bill Argles, Irene Dowding and Jean Gardner. Thanks to our copying dispatch and memory stick preparation teams. And thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Graham Cranmer.
Goodbye.
And Albie Minns.
Goodbye.
And for me, Roy Faithful, it's goodbye for now. Thanks for listening, and we hope you enjoy the week ahead. Please post your memory sticks back in the yellow wallet together with a laminated card when you finish listening. Thank you, and goodbye again.